Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:29 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time, and today is November 12th. I thought we'd kick off today with the Nasdaq because it hasn't been able to push back above the 12,000 level, and it's certainly a loss of momentum over the course of the last 2 months. So, and then we had the downside key reversal on or at the end of last week. So now the big question is, how much more additional consolidation are we going to have? Is it anything other than that? Or perhaps are we just getting a pause before the market pushes on to significant additional new highs? So there's a lot to cover there. One thing that I think is interesting is there is at least some evidence of divergences as cropping up in a number of indicators. For example, when we look at the longer term stochastics, it's definitely looking like a lower high right now. It was a lower high, it confirmed the lower high in October, but since the market pushed on and hit a new recovery high, then the indicator is nowhere near confirming. When we look at the shorter term stochastics, then we also have another lower high that didn't confirm the higher high on the index either. So we're definitely seeing a significant loss of momentum, not just in terms of the fact that the market has been going sideways relative to the impressive trend up from March through to the beginning of September, but also in terms of the internals of the market. Then I think it's also particularly interesting that when we look at the advanced decline line for the Nasdaq, this is not the Nasdaq 100, it would be the composite, but it has lost momentum too. In fact, it's been losing momentum for 2 years. Now, when we then think about the composite index, well, obviously there are a lot more shares in the composite than there are in the wider Nasdaq, but the dominance of both indices by these extraordinarily large companies, it looks very different to the kind of environment we've had on the advanced decline line. The advanced decline line's gone sideways for 2 years. The wider market has done nothing but rise. So it does suggest that the average share hasn't really gone much of anywhere, which does suggest that the above average share has been doing substantially better. So when we then think about, well, what are those? Well, it's obviously the FANGs. And the NYSE FANG index mirrors the performance of the NASDAQ. We also have the downside key reversal and some follow-through and less of an impressive rebound. It's also worth considering what's in this index, because the biggest performer is Alphabet, but then you also have a number of the Chinese companies like Baidu and Alibaba. So when we then look at some of those, well, they have been under some significant scrutiny over the course of the last while because of the shelving of the Ant Financial IPO. Well, Baidu has really only just begun to recover, and it became the center of opprobrium from the Communist Party back in 2018. It was effectively neutered, and its big data and artificial intelligence was subsumed into the government. Then when we look at Alibaba, well, obviously, there is at least some cross-shareholding with Ant Financial, and the share was in negative territory again in here today. It's obviously now the focus of some significant retributory action from the Communist Party, and therefore it's likely to represent a risk. Now, the problem is that companies in China, they prosper or fail based upon the favor that they gain from the Communist Party. And Alibaba is now definitely out of favor. But it does, on the one hand, perhaps offer some openings for the smaller companies that are trying to compete against it. So a Pinduoduo has done spectacularly well in here today, based on an almost doubling of earnings. So it's certainly doing well coming out of the pandemic, and it is clearly breaking higher. Then, when we look at the other big competitor to Alibaba, well, Tencent was in positive territory today, and it has so far held its breakout, but it's got a lot of work to do to convince investors that it isn't at exactly the same risk of disruption from changing political tides as Alibaba is. Then, when we think about Hong Kong, well, the entire opposition quit today on the back of China taking the interregnum period in, or taking advantage of the interregnum period in the USA to basically snuff out any form of opposition within the administration there. So that pretty much ensures that any semblance of abiding by the treaty with the UK for one country, two systems is now over. And the market barely blinked on that news. The H share index is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs. One thing that is, I think, going to be very difficult for people to get their head around and for the markets to decipher is that money will chase yield and growth. Capital is both mobile and global, but it's also completely amoral. And it will be attracted to the areas that have got the clearest or the easiest way to make a return. 10-year treasury yields in China are 3.25%. We've been really paying a lot of it, I've been at least paying a lot of attention to 10-year yields in the USA, and they were a little bit softer in here today, but still yielding just about 88 basis points. So by buying Chinese debt, then you can pick up almost four times more than you would if you were buying US debt. And of course, that means nothing if the currency isn't in your favor. And the renminbi has done nothing but strengthen since May. Now, it's a little overbought in the short term. We may yet get some additional pause and consolidation. But the reality here is that this is a very significant break of trend, and it's not quite as large as the significant appreciation we had in 2017, but it's significant nonetheless. And it is also something that is affording the rest of Asia a great deal of leeway to allow their own currencies to appreciate, and the Asia dollar index has already broken its downtrend. This is obviously now setting up an argument that if one were to look at where a yield is available, where growth is likely to outpace anywhere else, and where there is the potential to pick up currency appreciation, well, then one would have to be looking at Asia. And that is quite likely to be the case. And it's, I think, really very similar to the kind of situation we had in the early 2000s. It was at the same period of time that there was a lot of commentary circulating about the devaluation of fiat currencies and about the fact that there was a clear determination by governments to ensure that interest rates stayed low for a prolonged period of time to unwind the excesses, or to at least ease the burden of the excesses from the bust TMT bubble. And that had resulted in the dollar trending lower, with Asian currencies taking off. And we don't see it on this chart, so we have to look at more than 20 years of data to really start to comprehend what's going on there. I really feel I'm starting to feel my age when I think that that was 20 years ago. It feels like yesterday. But the reality is that Asian currencies bottomed in 2001, and in the period all the way up to 2008, they didn't look back. So we've had a very volatile trading period over the course of the last 2 years, but this is a significant break of the downtrend. If Asia is going to lead in terms of growth, then that is likely to be beneficial in terms of demand for commodities. And the Latin America dollar index has been trending downwards for a decade, and it is now steadying around the 40 area and testing the region of the trend mean. It hasn't done enough quite yet to break the downtrend, but it does look increasingly likely. When we think about what kind of commonality we have, well, there's a clear commonality between the weakness of the Latin American currencies and agriculture. And when we look at those two chart patterns, they're almost identical. They've both been trending downwards for a decade, but commodity prices have just begun to pick upwards. So when we look at what constitutes this index, it's a futures index, but it's got coffin, co excuse me. Coffee, corn, cotton, soybeans, soybean oil and meal, sugar and wheat. Well, the Robusta coffee contract continues to do well, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. It's rebounding from the region of the trend mean. This looks like a first step below the type 2 bottom, excuse me, above the type 2 bottom. Then when we think about Arabica coffee, it's been testing the dollar level and it has rebounded over the course of the last couple of weeks. This continues to look like support building. And the one thing, of course, we know about coffee is that when it goes, well, it can really go in a very robust manner. It is one of these commodity complexes that when it tends to break out, it can then rally in a very profound manner. That's usually in response to weather. Cotton prices, whoops, cotton prices had been really particularly weak over the last few years, but they do appear to be now in the process of demonstrating support at the lower side of the long-term base formation, and they've done enough to break the nearly 2-year sequence of lower rally highs as well. Then we had this long rounding characteristic for wheat, and it has also broken up and away from that base formation. Now we've had some weakness over the last while. It's coming back to test the upper side of the base. We may be at the beginning of a first step above it, but if it can hold the majority of the breakout, we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Soybeans was also a little weaker today, so we may see some additional consolidation, but it does look increasingly likely that it will be able to hold this move above the 1,000-cent level. So, with commodity prices starting to turn, and with oil prices now also starting to do better, the reality here is that oil prices are a significant cost for just about the production of every other commodity. So, if oil prices push upwards, it puts pressure on producers, and therefore prices have to rise. If we continue to see that oil prices are steady, much less rising, then that will put upward pressure on the price of just about every other commodity. Oil was a little weaker in here today, but it has been up in a robust manner over the course of the last week, so we may be in for some consolidation. I think that part of the reason why we've had a little pause on stock markets and a pause in the gold price, and yet some steadiness coming through in the, or sorry, in weakness in the oil price, steadiness in the gold price, is because of the questions about the length of lockdowns and whether the USA might move back into a lockdown. There was some reckless statements made by one of the people on President-elect Biden's committee for the coronavirus today, saying that a 4 to 6 week lockdown might be necessary. Perhaps someone should introduce whoever said that to a calendar, and that the Christmas season is only 6 weeks away. So the vast majority of retail businesses, they can struggle through the first 10.5 months of the year. But by the time it gets into the middle of November, they are firing on all cylinders for the Christmas season. It's where all of them make their profits for the year. Usually, the December period is worth three or four of any other month, and businesses simply cannot lose the Christmas season. Well, that pretty much ensures that Europe is going to be open for Christmas. In fact, that's what they told us. They said that when they introduced the lockdowns, they were doing it in order to ensure that they could open up in December. And we're already starting to see data that the number of cases is cresting. And this is already a lower high. And the number of deaths had certainly popped upwards, but it's nowhere near the peak from back in March. And we've had an exaggerated number of new cases. But historically, when people look at the history of pandemics, they look at the death rate, because that's hard data. It's impossible to test the entire population, and it tends to skew data. So now the bigger determination is, when are officials going to start reflecting that in their statements? Well, I suspect that by the time we get towards the end of this month, they will all be on message, and we will be looking at opening up for Christmas. Quite whether they're going to have to close down again in January is another question entirely. Then we had the fact that Moderna was up in a reasonably robust manner in here today and follow through on its data yesterday. They've announced, actually, I hadn't seen whether they have announced theirs. They haven't announced their data yet, but it's so similar to the kind of solution that Pfizer was producing that it's quite likely to be reasonably robust. Of course, it's going to take time to roll out some of these solutions, and the most endangered people are likely to get them first. But the reality is that by the time we get to the end of the first quarter, much less the second quarter, then it's quite likely that we're going to be looking at the pandemic in the rearview mirror, and there is a lot of pent-up demand. So there are two things that are animating investor interest at present. The first is whether we're going to see continued stimulus, and the second is whether we're going to see an additional lockdown. Of course, if there's another lockdown, there will have to be additional stimulus. But it's really just a question of time. We can then think about the fact that the Europeans are looking at additional stimulative measures. In fact, Christine Lagarde today was saying that she thought it was inevitable that the ECB would eventually adopt a digital currency. So there is the potential here that what we could be looking at for Europe is that the entire pandemic episode will have brought monetary and fiscal cohesion one step closer. And it is inevitable that eventually Europe will migrate towards a federal system. We've already seen more of the stepping stones taken on the way to doing that. Now, obviously, the countries that are still in there aren't really going to have a choice. And the fact that the UK has now left, it's really still very much open to interpretation whether the UK will succeed in leaving. It may really be like the Hotel California, that you can check in but never leave. And when we look at the FTSE 250, it has clearly broken on the upside. And this was another really quite dynamic move. When we think about the Australian market, they've been clamping down on social gatherings in Melbourne and Victoria, but for most of the last few months, my elderly cousin hasn't left the house since March, and that's obviously something that is really taxing her. But what's particularly interesting is that the Australian market looks virtually identical to the majority of Europe. But the bigger difference, though, is that the Australian dollar has clearly broken its downtrend. It was a little weaker in here today, but this looks like a first step above the base overall. And that is likely to also benefit from commodities, because the ASX 300 resources index has rebounded off the lows from the region of the trend mean over the last couple of weeks. When we think about the FTSE 350 mining index, it's been ranging below the 20,000 level, excuse me, for the last 8 years, and it looks increasingly likely that it is going to break on the upside. There is the potential here that we are going to see significant pressure on the purchasing power of currencies because central banks in the West are not going to want to raise interest rates. The bond market in China is telling us they're going to be the first people to raise interest rates. That's likely to continue to put upward pressure on the renminbi, and that will attract capital into the entire Asian region. And the commodities are beginning to demonstrate that investors are positioning themselves for increasing demand. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.